The Book Nook on WISO is made possible by six local library systems in Southwest Ohio: the Greene County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Midpoint Library System, Clark County Public Library, the Dayton Metro Library, and the Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Michelle Pretorius. Her novel, The Monster's Daughter, has just come out. She joins us by telephone from, are you in Athens, Ohio?
I am.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
Michelle, is this your first book?
It is. It's my debut novel.
Now, this is quite a book. How did you get the idea for this?
I started researching. I was writing my thesis for my MFA, and I started researching aspects of the Boer War. And somewhere along the line, I realized that I didn't know anything about my own history. During apartheid, we were under strict censorship, and of course, whites were fed a very mythologized version. And also a very skewed version of what was happening in the country. And so when I started researching, I realized that there is a lot to tell and a lot that people of my age and older don't know.
And since you are South African and you were unaware of this part of your history, it can be fairly well assumed that our listeners here in Southwest Ohio have no clue about any of this. Tell us about the Boer War. What was it? Who was fighting? What was it about?
The British, just to give you a quick overview, invaded because of gold being discovered in the then Transvaal province. And so Cecil John Rhodes and Lord Kitchener, they all wanted to march on the gold mines and possess. And the Boers, who were in charge at the time, they all put up resistance because it was a republic at the time. And what happened was that the British started a scorched earth policy where they would go from farm to farm and burn down the farms and kill all the livestock and then put the women and children in concentration camps because the Boers were using guerrilla tactics. They were vastly outnumbered. So they did guerrilla warfare in order to try and, you know, be some kind of force against the British. And so that's the point at which the book starts. Where the British are starting to burn down the farms and taking the scorched earth tactic.
And it's somewhat reminiscent of the Nazis, because we have a deranged doctor here. I don't know how much we want to give away about this, but wow, this is really dark stuff here.
I actually did base the doctor on the Mengele character from World War II. Not that he's a character, he's very real.
Mm-hmm.
But my character is based off of Mengele. There is no documentation that this happened in the First World War, but the camps are certainly very real, and the circumstances there is very real. So the character's based off of that, and I thought it was an ideal spot for me to start that plot line by combining the idea of somebody taking advantage of these women in the camps.
In case you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. Michelle Pretorius joins us. Her debut novel is The Monster's Daughter. And you employ a technique where we go back in time to the Boer War, and then we flash into the near future, about 5 or 6 years ago in South Africa, and we're following the work of a policewoman. And then we go back and forth, and you inexorably bring us to the point where the timelines converge. How difficult was this for you to do?
It took a lot of time. I actually started the book in 2010, which is why the present-day sequences were set in 2010. I started with the history section, And I realized that I didn't want to just, you know, write a history book. That's a big yawn. So I wanted to get the reader gripped into the narrative by using something which I really enjoy, which is murder mysteries.
Mm.
And so the idea of Alette Barr in the present day, investigating this crime that's connected to this 100-year history in South Africa, that's how it started. And I started writing the two separate narrative lines separately. So by the time I needed to bring them together, I'll be honest, I had nightmares and cold sweats trying to think of ways how these could be combined. And so it took a lot of writing, rewriting, revising, and slowly but surely the lines did start coming together. But it wasn't an overnight process.
How do you pronounce this constable's name?
Alette Barr.
Okay. She's really our central character, but that doesn't take anything away from these other characters that you've got in this story. And what I really love about this novel is that nothing is like we think it might be. For instance, just the title, as we're reading it, I said to myself, okay, the monster's daughter. I think I figured out who the monster's daughter is, but there could have been a couple monster's daughters in this story. It's all very confusing. The character Benjamin, initially, I really felt a lot of sympathy for this guy. And by the end, maybe I still did, but you took us through quite a trip getting there.
The idea, the reason I wanted to write the book was to try and understand what happened in South Africa and the present-day situation that exists there. And for me, it was very important that the same be done with the characters. Benjamin is not a likable character by the end, but I wanted to show how that happened, what his evolution was. And I tried my best to show that side with most of my characters. I don't believe in characters that are either just good and just bad.
Mm-hmm.
We are all a certain way because of things that happened to us. Personality is part of that, of course. But a lot happened to him. And you can kind of see his evolution from this innocent child to what he eventually becomes. And so not just the history, but also the characters doing that is very important for me in this book.
He is a very beautifully conceived character, Benjamin. Let's talk about Benjamin and Tessa and say what we can about them.
Well, Tessa and Benjamin, I don't think it's giving too much away. Tessa and Benjamin is born out of these experiments that are conducted during the Boer War.
Mm.
And right off the bat, it's clear that there's something different about them. They don't age. And in Tessa's case, they are separated. And in Tessa's case, she happens to end up with people who are nurturing and who try and protect her. Whereas Benjamin ends up in an institution because the authorities believe that he is mentally handicapped or even physically handicapped because he isn't growing. And so it's kind of a nature-nurture debate there, too. Are they the way they are because of what they are, or are they the way they are because of how they were raised? And so the aging thing is one aspect of them, but they also have strange abilities, like learning language, and they also look a little different. They're very pale. And what I wanted to do with them not aging and having these abilities is put characters in place that have an overview of the whole century. History is very cyclical, especially the history I researched for this book, and we forget parts, or we didn't know parts because we weren't around. And I wanted characters who were there to observe everything happening and that cycle repeating. And that was the idea behind having these two characters. Also, the fact that they learn languages very well is kind of a nod to the many languages in South Africa, and that they are put in place to understand all these languages and be like a unifying factor, but how all that, through circumstances, gets wasted because they're different and they're othered by their society.
And Benjamin, he can see in the dark, and he's been very much scarred by his early upbringing. The religion thing really is a heavy weight on him.
In South Africa, religion was used as a controlling factor. I remember growing up, religion was present in schools, in churches, obviously. At home, it was you didn't start the day in a class without praying in the morning. And unfortunately, like is often the case, religion was used as a tool to control and to justify things going on in the country. And so I wanted that kind of religion that I experienced as a child to be very much present in Benjamin's life, and even oppressively so. Mm-hmm. And to show that it can be a source of control and doing things that aren't what Christianity or any other religion is intended, how we can all skew religion for our own purposes or our own justifications.
In case you're just tuning in, my guest is Michelle Pretorius. Her novel is The Monster's Daughter. She joins us on the telephone from Athens, Ohio. And Michelle, a lot of people feel more comfortable when they can classify a novel as being a part of a particular genre. And I love the fact that your book could be considered historical fiction. It could be called a crime novel. It's science fiction. You are straddling all these different forms here, and it makes it even more entertaining. I love the fact that we have this constable who is kind of a classic constable. The book starts with a murder, like a good crime novel does, and yet she's kind of living in exile. She has been disgraced.
Yes. It follows the murder mystery pattern of a police officer who isn't the hero necessarily. It's a flawed hero, if anything. She's been disgraced. She wanted to be part of the Special Task Force, which is this elite task force of the section of the police, and went into training. It's notoriously difficult to get in. And when I researched the novel, there wasn't any women in because it's so difficult, physically demanding. And so she tried for various reasons, part of it because her father is a higher up in the police. And during her training, she was doing very well. And then she had an affair with one of her superiors and was immediately dismissed and sent to this tiny town to, you know, work there and pretty much direct traffic and investigate domestic calls. And so she ends up there very much desiring to get into her father's good graces again, as well as, you know, get out of the small town. And so the murder that she discovers gives her this opportunity and motivation to solve it, not only to give the victim justice, but to get out of the small town and make her father proud. And so that's the point at which the novel starts.
But she keeps getting into trouble, and she's working for police officers that maybe aren't exactly good people.
Right. There's a lot of criticism about the South African police service at the moment. You can just go online and see all the accusations of corruption and videos of abuse. And So I wanted to work that in there, the good side of that, which is, I think, embodied in her partner, Matebe, and to some extent, Alet. But I also wanted to show the other side, the part of the police service that's breaking down and is having some serious trouble in the present day. And these two characters, who are her superior in the book, they've been around a long time, and it's hard to say whether the corruption and the misdeeds are new or whether it's something that's just been carried on from prior administrations and governments. And that is something that happens and gets explored in the novel as you read on.
Her superior, Matebe, is really a wonderfully conceived character. I loved him, and I think my favorite scene is where she shows up at his house with a six-pack of beer.
Mm-hmm. Yes, she's trying to make peace. They don't exactly get along in the beginning. Uh-huh. And what she fails to realize in showing up at his house with a six-pack of beer is that he doesn't drink.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's an awkward scene between them where she's drinking, he's drinking coffee, and I think that is the point in the novel where the two of them start seeing eye to eye and mm-hmm. start realizing that they both want to do good. They just come at it in different ways.
As a reader, we feel more encouraged after that. We feel like things are starting to maybe make a little sense. You mentioned earlier that none of these characters are all bad or all good, but if anyone was all good, I'd say it's Matebe. And if anyone was all bad, I'd say it's this character. I can't pronounce his name, but I think it's Just or Justa?
Just, yes.
Ooh, he's all bad. Come on now. Is there something good about him? I missed it.
All right. So I might have taken a shortcut there.
Okay.
Justa is pretty much all bad.
Uh-huh.
But he's very representative of the opportunism that happened at that time in the country. I mean, this is 1901. I think he's in the book till in the 40s. And he is just a flat character because I wanted to get a point across about opportunism at the time. And it's always nice to have one just good villain. Matebe, on the other hand, I thought that it would be good to have one moral compass in the book, somebody who is infallible or seems to be infallible in any case, although he's also a victim of some hubris.
Good point. My guest is Michelle Pretorius. Her novel is The Monster's Daughter. Are there really, or were there these secretive groups of powerful men who were pulling the strings in South Africa for all those years?
Yes, this is a fact. The Broederbond was started around 1910, maybe a little later. And what happened was that after the Boer War, the Afrikaners were very oppressed by the British. They were dirt poor. And one of the things that happened was that they weren't allowed to speak Afrikaans in schools and were ridiculed if they did.
Mm-hmm.
So the British were absolutely trying to suppress language, financial prosperity. So the Afrikaners were at a very low point around 1910. So what happened was this group of men got together. They were all fairly young. I believe all of them were under 35, and started the Broederbond. It was a secret organization. Only men were members, and their goal was to raise the Afrikaner out of poverty. And they did that through forming like an insurance company, a bank, and infiltrating educational institutions. So they would have members that were principals of schools, for instance, ministers, bank managers, all these type of people, and they'd promote from within. So it was a very sly way of getting the Afrikaner off the ground and, exalting them to some extent. And every president in South Africa until 1994, when Nelson Mandela was inaugurated, was a member of the Bruderbund. So it absolutely controlled the government and all the higher-ups.
Michelle Pretorius joins us. Her novel is The Monster's Daughter. Growing up in South Africa, I'm sure you witnessed and experienced some of the things that you describe near the end of the book as our timeline converges, the racial unrest, the shift in the governments. What was that like to live there during that?
I'll be honest, we were very insulated. The government, as I said before, censored the media to quite some extent. And I was a child when this was all going on, so you'd have like little blurbs during, you know, the newscast of the day. And it would just show people rioting. And typical of situations like this, there would be a lot of stereotyping, a lot of negative things said, and the true reasons weren't always revealed. What I also experienced, not just in my household but in many others, was that the TV got turned off. Things were dismissed. So I am quite willing to say that I grew up very ignorant of the real trouble going on. And it's only after I started researching the novel that I really started understanding what that period of time was like. We were not only censored through the media, but there were also very definite borders. The black population, or all non-whites for that matter, had to go to separate areas. And so we grew up very insulated, very safe, or feeling safe in any case, and we had rights that were protected. And, you know, awful as that was, I didn't know. That sounds almost unbelievable, but we just didn't know the real truth about what was happening.
Were you raised bilingual?
Yes. I was raised Afrikaans, and my stepfather was English, so I got exposed to English very early on.
And now, with the advantage of time and distance and being here in America and being able to look at your native land from a distance, what is your perception? Here in America, we just get news stories. We don't really know what it's like in South Africa. What's your sense of the vibe there and what's going on with the government and with the people?
I just came back from a trip in May. I try and go back at least once every 2 or 3 years. There's good and there's bad, obviously. Unfortunately, the disparity between rich and poor is wider than ever. One good thing is that there is economic advancement in the non-white population, but a lot of the wealth is still situated amongst white people. And like we did a tour of both Soweto and Khayelitsha, the big black townships in Johannesburg and Cape Town. And the poverty is still heartbreaking. 22 years into apartheid ending, there is still a huge divide. People who don't have running water, that live in almost squalor, just trying to make it. I think what our tour guide gave us the statistic that in Khayelitsha there is something like 75% unemployment. I'm not sure if that is a fact, but that's what he told us. And whereas not even 10 kilometers from there, there is incredible wealth. Cape Town is a beautiful city, and it's an absolutely fantastic town to visit, but there's huge disparity and therefore also huge problems. And you only have to go on the internet or open a newspaper in South Africa to see all the accusations of crime and corruption and things just not working as they should. But in that sense, it's no different than any other post-colonial society anywhere in the world. So it has problems. On the other side, it's a wonderful thing to see that people are really trying. There are people that are really trying to help, to get along, to integrate. My sister is part of the Born Free generation, the kids that were born after 94, who don't have that experience of apartheid and what happened before. And it's just so wonderful to see them getting along and trying to make this a better society. So there's good and there's bad, as in any society, I suppose.
Michelle, your novel, The Monster's Daughter, is your first book. It's been out for a couple of weeks. I'm going to assume it took you a really long time to complete it. What's it been like now to have this book out in the world for the last couple of weeks? What's your feeling?
I'm cautiously optimistic. It's because it's a debut novel. We're getting some reviews back now. There's a slow rise. And it's on a virtual book tour at the moment, and it's gotten very good feedback. And especially in the UK, there's been a lot of enthusiasm there. So it's a slow build, but it's been wonderful to get the reaction from people, because you know you write and you don't know if this is going to fly, if people are going to like it. But I'm optimistic. It's doing well, and I'm very, very humble and glad that people are interested in South Africa and in the story.
Well, it's beautifully written and conceived, and you have some elegant twists in it, which I thoroughly enjoyed reading, and I hope the book does wonderfully for you. And I'm
Thank
sure
you
we,
much.
You betcha. I'm sure we have some listeners out there who are wondering, what is a virtual book tour? What does that involve?
A virtual book tour is the book visits certain book blogs in the time and age where we're in, where you know, it's a digital age, and so a lot of hype for a book gets generated by, you know, book blogs, Twitter feeds, that type of thing. And so the book, to get the word out there, my publisher put it on a virtual book tour. So it has certain dates in which bloggers review the book and give their opinion about it. And it is on one of those at the moment.
Okay. And if you go to the Twitter page for Michelle's publisher, Melville House Books, you'll see right there on that banner that there it is, The Monster's Daughter, right out there in front of you. It's like their big book, and I was delighted to see that.
Yes, they're a fantastic they're an indie publisher, but they've been fantastic in getting the word out and supporting the book.
It's really been a pleasure talking to you about it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
My guest has been Michelle Pretorius. Her book is The Monster's Daughter. You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McKeonis.